We're holding on the design number days, four lines from the bottom. We left off in the middle of a discussion. We started talking yesterday about the case where an Eved Ivri sells himself to a goy, where we said that none of the goy's heirs yarshin him. He goes free immediately, and that led us to point out that actually in Minat Torah, a goy does yarshin his father a goy. Based on that, based on the very fact that the Torah has to be maiv, those heirs don't yarshin the Eved Ivri. And then we said the second possibility, if you have a ger yarshining from his father, who's a goy, that concept only exists to Rabbanan. We said that Rabbanan made the takana that he should be able to yarshin him shem yachzor b'surah because we don't want him to go back to his old ways. Next, what about the other way around? A goyish son yarshining from a father with a ger, so the father became a ger, the son didn't, and the son is still a goy. The ger is a ger. The father was in Tzgayer, he already had children, and the children remained goy. The ger is a ger, or a ger yarshining from a ger, namely a father and son who were in Tzgayer together. There's no concept of Yerusha there, neither Midrash Eisa nor Midrash Rabbanan. And why aren't we worried in the case of Ger es HaGer? Why aren't we worried about Shema Yachzor L'Surah? The Tosfos Yom Tov says that because he grew up as a Yid, we're not so worried. Shema Yachzor L'Surah is more concerned in the case of an adult who became a Ger. If he grew up from childhood on as a Yid, then we're not so worried Shema Yachzor L'Surah. And it gives another reason as well. We learned before that when a ger dies and has no heirs lahalacha, then anybody can take his nechassim. They're hefker for anybody to take. Therefore, the chachamim didn't want to. You're going to say that the son and the ger takes them over. You're not only you're giving him a benefit, fine, but you're doing it at the expense of everybody else who could have taken it for themselves. The chachamim didn't want to do that. Anyway.
Or
we're going to be talking about an harasa v'ladasa shalei b'kedusha and harasa shalei b'kedusha v'ladasa b'kedusha. Wait, but it's true. But at least okay. So the first reason about that there's no worry shemayachta v'surah maybe isn't a strong reason. But the second reason that you don't want to deny it to everybody else. That's a stronger reason. Jitnan, and we know this because the Mishnah says at the end of Masechta Shviyos, love a mois min a ger shen is gair bonavim. If a person borrows money from a ger whose children when it's gair along with him, lo yachzor lebonav, you don't have to return the loan to the children if the father dies. The master, and if he returns it, ein ruach chachamim noichemenu. Now, usually ein ruach chachamim noichemenu means the chachamim are not happy with what you do; they would rather you didn't. Now here, it seems a little hard to say that. I mean, if the guy wants to give away the money, why would the chachamim have a problem with that? So for that reason, Rashi says over here differently than usual. In machzik and lotoba, the chachamim don't consider it you did such a great thing. Shalait yuchul apach, they didn't require you to. You want to give to hate, it seems from Rashi. But unlike what usually ruach chachamim rechaymena means, you taka don't have to lahalacha, but the chachamim are happy if you do. Here we're saying the chachamim are sort of indifferent about it, according to Rashi. There are other mafarshim who explain that actually it does mean, in the usual sense, ein ruach chachamim neichemenu, that the chachamim disapprove of what you do. And for a few reasons, for a few possible reasons, among them, that if you do that, people are going to think that this son is a full-fledged Yisrael, rather than a ger, and that has implications in halacha. But because of that, you don't want there to be confusion that people are going to think that somebody who's a ger is really a yid. Therefore, ein ruach chachamim neichemenu, therefore the chachamim disapprove of you returning the loan in that case. Tanya, the Gemara asks, but don't we learn a braisa that says ruach chachamim neichemenu? Actually, so the Mishnah, Tanya recording a braisa, I go to the Gemara, changes it to v'hatznan, because actually the Mishnah there at the end of Shviyah says ruach chachamim neichemenu. So in that case, what we just quoted, ein ruach chacham nechemenu, would be a braisa, and now we're pointing out there's a Mishnah that says the other way around. Whatever it is, you have a contradiction, that ruach chacham nechemenu. The answer is, lekasha kansha rosa v'ledasa shalei v'kdusha. It depends. Was the child conceived and born shalei v'kdusha? I mean, he was born when his father was still a goy, and he was in this gayer together with his father afterwards. The kansha rosa shalei v'kdusha v'ledasa v'kdusha. Whereas the other case is where he was conceived not v'kdusha, when his father was still a goy, but by the time he was born, his father had already been this guy. Now, Rashi explains, therefore,
he's still
going, well, no, he's more of a Yisrael Gomer. I mean, to a certain extent, you're right. I mean, even In fact, we learned back in Yevamos, even if Haras Shalai B'Kdusha V'Lai Dasa B'Kdusha, he's still not a full-fledged Yisrael for all purposes. He still is considered a ger for many purposes. But, so Rashi learns that if Haras Shalai B'Kdusha V'Lai Dasa B'Kdusha, since he's very similar to a regular Yisrael, then Ruach HaChamim Nareichem Enu. Whereas if then the Chachamim do approve of you returning alone. Whereas if it wasn't even like Dasa B'Kdusha, if he was this guy or after he was sometime after he was born, whether as a child or as an adult, then in Ruach HaChamim Nareichem Enu, which again Rashi said doesn't mean they disapprove of it, but they're indifferent about it. You haven't really accomplished anything important. Tosfos asks discusses this based on a Gemara in Rav Basra, a case over there involving the staff of the father who was a ger and a child and his son who was heard also Shalev Kedusha, the Lo Dasa B'Kedusha, the famous Rav Mori Baruchel who was mentioned in various places in Shas. That the father Isu Giyora had deposited a certain sum of money by Rava, and when he passed away, Rava was figuring out, the Gemara discusses over there, how la halacha he should be allowed to keep it rather than returning to Rav Mori Baruchel, the son. So what is, does Rava not want Ruach HaChamim Nareichem Enu? Rav Mori Baruchel, Harasa Shalev Kedusha V'Lo Dasa B'Kedusha. According to Rashi, what is Rava trying to find ways to be able to keep the money? So Tosfos starts by saying that maybe you could argue there's a difference between a loan and a pikadon. A loan, the guy did you a favor, therefore it's not right to withhold it from his children. A pikadon, now that you, Rava, were doing him a favor by holding on to the pikadon for him. Yeah. Well, so the Tosfos continues that the Re disagrees with Rabbi Natan's opinion on that. The Re says that, so the Re learns the other way around. If Harasa Shalei B'Kdusha V'Lei Dasa B'Kdusha, like in the case of Rav Mori Baruchel, then the Chachamim don't want you to return it, or at least they're indifferent about you returning it, according to Rashi, because it's too easily confused with a real Yisrael. And the fact is, he's not a full-fledged Yisrael. He is, for certain purposes, considered a get. For example, Tosfos gives the example. Let's say he's Miyabim, his brother's wife, which we learned in Yevamos, he could, because they're not considered, if he and his brother, let's say, were in his gayer, under these circumstances, they could marry each other's wives, they're not considered related la'alacha. But it wouldn't be a Yibum, but that's the point. People are going to think that, the choice of Yom Tov that I was mentioning before, was saying why we don't make the gzera, why we don't make the takana that a ger should yarish in a ger, why are we not worried shemayakzul basura? Why are we not worried shemayakzul basura, and also why? No, he didn't say shemayakzul basura gomer. No, the Tosfos Yom Tov was talking about the why didn't we make a takana like we do that a ger yarish in his father a goy? Why didn't we similarly make a takana that a ger yarish in his father a ger? Not to mechla basura. Yeah. Because we didn't no the choice was Yom Tov that I was talking about before was saying that you don't want to take away the ability of other Jews to be koneh, which it's technically hefker to all of them, and you don't have to worry so much about Yaakov Asura because he's grown up as a yid anyway. That's a different thing than all this. Anyway, so the point is, imagine Tosfos said you had several brothers over there. Imagine you had one that you had a couple brothers, let's say, that Harasa Shalei B'Kdusha V'Lei Dasa B'Kdusha. We learned in Yevamos that even if they're twins, they're actually allowed to marry each other's wives because there's no halachic relationship between them. Imagine though that then you have another brother who imagine now you have another brother who the yibum would apply to his wife, or he would have to be miyabim one of their wives. People are going to think no yibum is necessary, not realizing. So therefore, because of that kind of thing, in a case where they're too easily confused with Jews, with born Jews, with conceived and born Jews, we kind of don't want you to return. Ein roch chamanei chemenu. Whereas if hodasev eladasev shalei b'kdusha, no problem. Everybody knows the difference between a yid and a ger, and therefore go ahead and return it in roch chamanei chemenu. That's how the Re learns. So that was, we had one source for the whole concept, going back to the concept that a goy yarshens from his father. In Atzara, we said one source for it was the pasuk about that an Eved Ivri is not inherited by his father, by the goy's heirs, implying that the goy has heirs in Atzara. So now, I have a different pasuk for that concept, that a goy yarshens from his father in Atzara. The pasuk says, Dichtiv, the Abishah says to the Jewish people, don't try to take over any of the land in Edring, because I've given Esav as an inheritance, Harseir. So we see that it can be spoken of as an inheritance in connection with goyim. Why the Yomi Yisrael Mumer Shiny? Maybe Esav is not really considered a full-fledged goy. Maybe he's considered a Yisrael, a Yid or Shmadzich. After all, he was born from Yitzchak and Rivka. And there's a discussion actually about the question: did Esav have a bris? The Chassam Sofer brings from some place. He says, I remember I saw it someplace in Divrei Chazal, but I can't find where, that Esav did not in fact have a bris because he was born very red-looking, and therefore they thought it's too dangerous to mal him, as is the halacha, when a baby is too red, and then by the time he was old enough that they realized it's his natural coloring, that he didn't want it. So according to that, he might not have never been considered a Yisrael at all, but this is before Matan Torah, after all. But according to the other way of looking at it, that he did have a bris, then in that case, at least in terms of those days, before Matan Torah, he could be considered a Yisrael. No, rather we have a different pasuk further on, also in Parshas Devarim over there. The Eibishter tells the Jewish people, don't think you can pass through the lands of Moab or Ammon without their permission. Because I've given the Or, which is the area of Moab and Ammon, to the children of Loit as an inheritance. And Loit is definitely not considered a Yid. No, the point is that this that Moab and Ammon have their lands is after Matan Torah. This is their passing through on their way to Eretz Yisrael. So why doesn't Rav Chiya Ba'avin like Rava's pasuk? Why does he need to find a different pasuk for it? He said, very nice. You're darshaning that you have to figure out the balance for the pay off for the Eved Ivri with the one who bought him, not with the son of the one who bought him. It doesn't say that in the pasuk. So you're darshaning it, and therefore you're getting the concept that a goy yarshens from his father. But the Torah never says so explicitly. Whereas my pasuk says it explicitly. Why doesn't Rava use Rav Chiya Ba'avin's pasuk? He would say, "Mishum kvoidu da Avram shayni." It might be different because of the honor of Avram Avinu. Therefore, yes, even bnei Esav, who arguably might be considered a goyim, maybe a Yisrael Mumer, or even bnei Loit, who are for sure full-fledged goyim, but because they're members of Avram's family, therefore the Eibishter gave them special covered and speaks of their lands as being an inheritance from their ancestors, not necessarily proving that a run-of-the-mill goy who's no relation to Avram yarshens from his father. For that you need Yoshe. For that you need Veloyim Yoshe Kaneu. Turn it up on him. We learn in a braisa. Yesh pi ivri she'en be'ivriya. There are certain things that apply to an Eved Ivri that do not apply to an Amo Ivriya. Yesh pi ivriya she'en be'ivriya. There are certain things vice versa. Namely, yesh pi ivri shu yotze b'shanim, that he goes out after 6 years. Now we're going to ask in a minute, doesn't Amo Ivri also? Well, we'll get there. Hold off with the questions a minute. Shoyotze b'shanim, that he goes out after 6 years of a yovel, or in yovel, whether he was a nirtza or not, or mitzvah to Adon, or if Adon dies without any heirs, mashen kin be'ivriya, as opposed to an amo ivriya, which not. Again, what does that mean? We'll give it a second. V'yesh be'ivriya, conversely, you have things with an amo ivriya that don't exist with an eved ivri. Shari ivriya yotze b'simonim, an amo ivriya goes free once she develops simonim. V'einim kedus v'nishnes, she cannot be sold twice. And she can be bought out by Al-Korche, who we're also going to talk about soon. Mashen can be Ivri, which has, none of these things apply to an Ivri.
And what's about
the
she doesn't get
first? We're talking about things that involve her, that involve the person going free, not things that involve the person staying on as a slave. It's true, Ritzia doesn't apply to her, but we're not counting that because we're talking about things that involve the person going free. So, Omamau Yesh Be'ivri Shein Be'ivriya, or Rimini, what do you mean these things apply to an Eved Ivri and not to an Amr Ivriya, Shonim, Yovel, and Mrs. Arden? Our Mishnah said, Yeseir all of Amr Ivriya Shekhoin Atzim with Simonim, that an Amr Ivriya has something beyond an Eved Ivri, she has Simonim, plus the other three methods that he has as well. Amr Ivriya Shekhoin Atzim with Simonim. Right, but what the Braitha means is, if the Odin was miyayed her, if he decided to take her as a wife, by using the Kesef Kinyan, as we talked about before, and as we're going to talk about later on, then at that point she doesn't leave him with any of these things. She doesn't leave the marriage and over after 6 years. It isn't dissolved by Yovel, it isn't just
wife.
Well, then the question is, Yodah Pshita, Gitzabaya, well, of course, if he's miyayed her, she needs a get. Why would you think anything else? The answer is, you might think, after all, The halach, how did she come to this? This yirud is kind of an unusual kind of marriage. It's not the regular kind that involves kiddushin and then nisuin. In fact, later on we're going to discuss the issue whether yirud is a one-shot thing that creates kiddushin and nisuin, or only kiddushin, but whatever it is, it's still, regardless, it's an unusual kind of kiddushin. She started out as an amor evriya and then gets promoted by yirud, basically. Yirud is a kefet. Yirud is a declaration, basically. He says, you had it. Whatever. We'll learn the details about years later, but whatever. In that sense, it's an unusual kind of kedushin in that she started out as an amor evriya. So, ma'or detemelo livsala hilchas aminat. You would think maybe the original halachas of an amor evriya don't go away. So in that case, we would say a regular wife can only go out with a get or misses a bow. Here, because she started out as an Amma Evriya, and had there not been yield, she would have gone free after 6 years, or simonim, or what have you. Maybe you would think in this case the marriage is dissolved by any of those things also. So, mashallah, that's what we're being told. You would think, maybe, that if she wants such as 6 years. Let's say there comes a point, she says, I want out. 6 years have passed, fine. Maybe she can go out without a get. So, mashallah, that is the Chiddush Shana. Fine, then what does the Braita mean that she goes out with Simonim? Hakakama, what the Braita means is, Im lo yoda, however, if he was not miyad her, yotza after Simonim. Then she does have the advantage over an Eved Ivri that she goes free, besides with any of the three things that he does, also with Simonim.
So the marriage cancels the Simonim.
So the marriage cancels everything. It makes it an ordinary marriage, and now she needs a get. As opposed to, if there was no marriage, then yeah, all the things that apply to an Eved Ivri plus Simonim. We said the Einanim Keres Venishnas. She cannot be sold twice. So what does that mean? The Klal the Eved Ivri Nimka Venishna. So are you implying that an Eved Ivri could be sold twice? V'hatanya, but we learn in a Braisa, v'gnevosev lo v'kfeiloi. An Eved Ivri, when it says, the Pasuk says, im ein lo v'nimka v'gnevosev, if he doesn't have what to pay back, then he gets sold for his theft. So the word v'gnevosev is extra. Of course, what else are you selling him for in that case? So we learn from it, v'lo v'kfeiloi. You don't sell him to pay the tashlum kefil. So he stole something worth $100. He's supposed to pay back $200 because that's tashlum kefil. If he doesn't have $100, that's when you sell him. If he doesn't,
because he stole,
that's what we're talking about. But if he has $100 but he doesn't have enough for the tashlum kefil, you don't sell him to pay off the tashlum kefil. He pays back what he has, which is $100 plus whatever he does towards the $200, and everything else just he owes it. When if he ever gets more money, then he'll have to pay it back at that point. But you don't sell him to pay the kefil. Then that's what we're saying. You sell them. Except, well, we're going to talk about it, and we're going to talk about soon the case of how much his value is compared to the value of the theft. We'll get to that. Wait. Okay. But v'leibis feilei, v'gnevosev v'leibis mamoi also means you only sell him for his gneva, not for being an eid zoimim. So Rashi says it means, suppose that Edim comes to Beis Din, they testify that Pliny stole, where if Pliny doesn't have money, he would then be sold as an Eved. Turns out they're Edim Zemim. We don't say instead we're going to sell them as Avadim. Instead, we give them Malchus, which is kind of the default punishment for anybody for any Eid Zemim where you don't do the actual thing. Usually it's Fasi from like Kasher Zomam. You're supposed to do to them what they wanted to do to the other guy. That applies to Malchus, it applies to Misa, it applies to Mammon. There's certain cases that most of them are listed in Masechta Makos where instead of doing the actual thing that they wanted to do to the person, instead you give them Malchus.
Right.
The Gemara learns it over there from Sokin. But, there's also practicalities. For example, you have the first example of the Makos over there. Suppose that people come to Beis Din and they testify that Pliny is not a Kayan, he's a Cholo, he's a Ben Grusha or Ben Chalutza. They themselves aren't necessarily Kayanim. You can't say now that we're going to make them Halalim, because even if they are Kayanim, you can't make them Halalim. Instead, you give them Malchus. Anyway, so this is an example of that also. The Rambam has a different explanation of Bizmamai. It means, never mind that they're testifying not the guy stole. Then you could argue, okay, of course you don't sell them. They have money. And they could claim, we didn't know the guy didn't have money. We thought the guy was going to have to pay money for it. The Rambam has a different shita, which is they actually come to Beis Din and testify that Pliny was sold as a slave. And now it turns out they're Eid of Zemim. So that's a more direct nexus to slavery. Nevertheless, we don't say that we make them slaves. We just give them office. Okay. and b'gneva. So, and another word, another thing we learn from the word b'gneva, so is kivin shenimka pam achat. Once he was sold one time, shuvi after rashay the mocher, then you can't sell him again. So, what do you mean that an omel hevriya can't be sold twice, implying that an eved hevri can? Omer rova lekasha can b'gneva achat can b'shtei gnevas. It depends whether we're talking about there was one theft or two. Namely, Rashi learns like this: So suppose he stole a thousand bucks. He himself is not worth 1,000, and he doesn't have 1,000 to pay back. So let's say, for example, he's only worth 500. So you sell him once, he works for 6 years, he goes free, and then you sell him again to pay off the other half. So that would be Nimka Vinishne. Rashi says the other way around. No. You don't sell him for just a half and then eventually sell him again. You don't in that case. Rashi says if he's not worth the whole gneva, ain't in him to b'shvil chetzia. He's not sold for half or chriyotzi yimachem b'shvil chetzia, and then he'll be resold for the other half. What's the case, Rashi learns, when you would sell him again, is if there were two different thefts. He stole twice, and let's say they only brought him to Beis Din after both thefts took place. He's not worth as much as both thefts combined, but he's worth for one. So then you sell him once, and then you sell him again. And then because each one is an income big nevasa, each one is being sold for one theft.
But if he's worth less than,
if he's worth less than one, that's what we're going to talk about soon. That's what we're going to talk about in a bit. Right. Which actually brings Tosfos to ask that we're going to have a machlokes on this subject soon. What if he's worth less than the value of the theft, or if he's worth more than the value of the theft, and we have different opinions about it. Neither of them seems to fit the way it actually is saying over here. So therefore, Tosfos learns the other way around, that gneva achas, if he's worth less than the gneva, then you sell him as many times as is necessary to pay for that one gneva. As opposed to, if it's shtei gnevas, then you only sell him the one time.
Only
the one time. Well, omale abaya b'gnevasa tura machma. Can't the word b'gnevasa equally well mean multiple gnevas? Sometimes you have the Torah uses a singular noun to mean a mass number of things. Kivasus pare, for example. So b'gnevasa could equally well mean one gneva and many. Ela omale abaya l'kasha kan ba'adam echad kan shnei b'nei adam. No, abaya says the difference would be whether it was one person or two people. So, Rashi learns that it means like this. Since the pasuk after all does use a singular expression, then therefore, so if he stole many times, we go by how many times is he being taken to Beis Din. This is how Rashi learns. If he's being taken to Beis Din at one time for multiple thefts from the same person, and it has to be that one, necessarily it's that one person bringing him to Beis Din. Why would various people be bringing him for individual thefts from them? Right. So one person bringing him to Beis Din, you stole from me many times, that at least can be considered b'gnevasa. There were many gnevas, but it's all from one person, and it's all one din Torah. No, b'gnevasa means his gneva, singular, but because it's true, the word gnevasa can also be a mass noun. It can also be a collective noun, meaning many gnevas. So if you have, but at least gnevas have it, at least you have many gnevas, but it's drumya da'achas, Rashi says, similar to one gneva in the sense you bring them to Beis Din only the one time for all of them. So then you would just sell them the one time. As opposed to if it's shnei b'nei adam, namely two different din Torahs, then he would be sold individually for each one.
Two different people who were stolen?
Two different people that he stole from. Then we would say you don't sell them again and again. After the first person, after he sold to pay off the gneva from the first person, you don't sell them again to pay off the gneva from the second person. You just have to owe it. You just have to owe it when he has more money.
As opposed to several gnevas
to one person, where he takes them to a din Torah all at once.
Altogether, that's what
gneva says. Yeah. Turn it up on him. Gneva elef b'shava chamesh meis. Suppose that he stole 1,000 and he's only worth 500. Nimka b'chozer v'nimka. Then you sell him again and again. You sell him the one time to pay off 500 of it, and when he's done with that, you sell him again to pay off the other 500. Hagoritha Grub brings over here a different girsa, which is the Rambam's girsa, that ain't a chose of a nimka, that he doesn't get sold again. You just sell him the one time, and then that's it. You don't sell him again after that.
But is it sold or is it?
Well, that's different girsas. I mean, Rashi versus the Rambam have different girsas over here. Our girsa over here, a chose of a nimka, is Rashi's girsa. Gnevich chomesh meis v'shava elek. What if the other way around? He stole 500. He himself is worth 1,000. Ein enim to klal, then you don't sell him at all. Because you, how can he sell him? He himself is worth 1,000 to pay off a debt of only 500. No, so therefore, you don't sell him at all. There, you don't sell him at all. Instead, he owes that 500. No, you don't take him as an anything. He stays a free person. He owes $500 to pay off when he has money. Rebbe Leizer says no. If only if the gneva is exactly as much as the value that he could be sold for, nimker, then you sell him. And if not, whether it's less or more, then you don't sell him. Actually, in this, Rebbe Lazar wins out over the Chachamim. He has a point against them. The Mishnah gneivah chomesh meis v'shava elef. After all, what do you say the difference would be if he stole 500 and worth 1,000, which you Chachamim agreed to ain nimker, that you can't sell him? The nimker kula amar rachman of lechetzi, because the Torah says you sell all of him, not half of him. Well, Hachanami nimka b'nevosam, Rachman of Olam nimka b'chatzi g'nevosam. By the same logic, the Torah says he sold for his theft, implying for the entire theft, not for half of it. So by the same logic, whether he's worth less or more than the theft, we ought to say that Rebbe Lazar has a better point. Nevertheless, though, the Rambam still passes like the Chachamim. Very nice. Rava is saying that Rebbe Lazar has a good point against the Chachamim. However, the halacha is still like the majority as it usually is, and not like Rebbe Lazar, especially. It's very rare that we pass him like Rebbe Lazar. Anyway, because Shamusi, you. He's a member of Beit Shammai, or he was put in Chayrim, whatever. But with that though, the Rambam's girsa being nimker v'eini chozim nimker is therefore that if he's worth less than the theft, we do sell him, but only the one time. We don't sell him again for the same theft. The Rambam's shita actually on the previous Gemara is also that you don't sell him multiple times for the same theft. For different thefts, yes, you can sell him again and again. That's what we said before, the difference between him and an Amar Ivriya. But for the same theft, if he's worth more, then you don't sell him at all, like even the Chacham agrees to that. And if he just has to work it off eventually, but just as a regular debt. And if he's worth less than it, then you sell him only the one time, and the rest, yes, though. Then we said another difference between an Eved Ivri and an Amor Ivri is a machdin oisa bar kochoi, that we redeem her, we make her be redeemed against his will. Well, against whose will? Sava Rava Lameim bar kochoi d'odin. So Rava thought, hey, it means against the master's will. Even if he doesn't want to accept the money, you still force him to take it and free her. So what does that mean, against his will? So what does that mean? But we can't assume that Baal Korcha means we force him to accept the money. You can't really force somebody to the other. You can't really force somebody to accept money. It would have to be, therefore, you would have to argue, that we would have to force him to accept the shtar for the money. Well, I'm not. Why should we make him do that? How is that fair? It's like he has a pearl in his hand. He has an Amor Hevriya, a very useful worker, and all we're telling him is you have to give her up anytime we say, and all you get for it is a piece of a shard of earthenware that we wrote the shtar on. How is that fair?
What is he going to do with the shtar? It
means that this money is owed to him. Fine, he has a shtar that he can eventually collect on. But the fact of the matter is, right now he doesn't even have cash in hand. Same as any other shtar. You write the shtar. You say that I plenty owe X amount to other and so and so for in return for I'm freeing my daughter. Plainness. Whatever. Yeah, exactly. Elo Amar Abaya, no. So Abaya says it doesn't mean Bar Kocha of the other. It means Bar Kocha to Av. It means against the father's will. Meaning if he has money, then we force him to redeem her. Because of the detriment of the mishpacha. It looks bad for the family when a member of the family has to be an Amar Ivriya.
How long after she becomes an Amor Ivriya?
Basically, as soon as possible. But actually, wait. So actually, when we say over here about Kocha De'av, actually, are we talking? So Tosfos discusses it a little bit. Does it mean necessarily the father, or maybe actually does it mean that we force the family to redeem her? Even if the father may disagree, the father would say, you know what? I can't have her back in the house. I can't take care of her. Nevertheless, we would still say that the family, so the family still has to do it. There's other explanations also, including that maybe even we force the father to borrow money, or we force the rest of the, we force the rest of the family to lend the father money so that he can redeem her. Because of the Gamishbach. Fifth question is, Yochi Evadivri Nami Nechpinul of Nemishbacha. Fine, why are we saying only by an Omer Abriya? Let's say the same thing by an Evadivri. Let's force the family to redeem him. The answer is, Hodo Ozol Amad Benafe. Fine, you do that. He's just going to go sell himself again. He hasn't gained anything. Like we said the other day, if he figures if his family is going to bail him out, then he's going to keep on, he's going to keep on reselling himself. Okay, so the question is, fine, in the case of a father and an Amaria, won't we have the same problem if we force the family to redeem her, won't he go sell her again? There, we just said, Hakafani ain't an imperious finition. It's fine, we just said it. You can't sell her again. So therefore, he won't have that ability. So therefore, yes, we can force them to redeem her, or force the father to force them to lend money to the father, or whatever, yeah. Fine. Who would this go according to? This that was saying that you can't resell her, this would be according to Reb Shimon. Titania. Moichel Adam as Bitil Ishus Vashona. A man is able to sell his daughter for Ishus, meaning, in other words, sell her in the sense that he can receive Kedushin on her behalf. Vashona, and he can do it again. As long as there was not Nisurin, as we're going to talk about soon, then as long as there was only Kedushin, then she's still in his Ishus. Lashifchus Vashona. He can also sell her for shivchus again. This is according to the Tanakhama. That's what we're talking about in Arusa. If she was nis'aris and then widowed from the Erisin or divorced from the Erisin, the father still has rishus over her, and therefore he'd be able to, yeah. So the ishus, he can do l'ishus v'shoina, l'shivchus v'shoina. He can also sell her into shivchus twice. So in other words, he sells her and 6 years of yovel or whatever has passed. She's still not, there's still no simonim yet, and he has the ability to sell her again. And he's able to sell her to Ishus. He's able to accept Kedushin on her behalf after Shifchus, after she was a Shifcha. Shifchus after Ishus. But not the other way around. Once she was married, once she was miscarried, then he's not able to, so he accepted Kedushin on her behalf. She was widowed and returned back home. He can't at that point sell her as a Shifcha. That's the kind of comment. Reb Shimon, k'shem she'ein adam moicher es bitul l'shivchus achar ishus, just as a person cannot sell his daughter as a shivcha after she was miskadish, which even you, the Tanakhama, agree to that, kach ein adam moicher es bitul l'shivchus achar shivchus, so also he can't sell her into shivchus after one shivchus. So it's a one-time, one-shot deal. So this braisa that we said before, that you can only do it once, that would be according to Reb Shimon. What's the underlying machlokas? The machlokas between Reb Shimon and Tanakhama is the same as the machlokas of Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva. The Tanya, as we learn in Reb Raisa. Now, the Pasuk said, the Pasuk, when it's talking about an Amor Hebriya, it says, La'am Nachri, it says, it continues, La'am Nachri, La'yim Shalomachri, he doesn't have the ability to rule over her, to sell her to a foreign people, meaning to another person. Bevigdei ba. Now, the word beged, the Shodesh beged in Tanakh has two meanings. It can mean a garment, and it can also mean Meloshin beged, Meloshin treachery, acting treacherously, or deceitfully, let's say, yeah, towards another person. Yeah. So what does it mean over here? It means, kiven shepeiris talitza aleha, in the sense of a begging. Once he spread his talus over her, the zigday ba, once he spread his talus over her by being kaddish her, shuvein rashoi lemochro, then at that point he's not able to sell her anymore. Divrei Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Yezaimer, the zigday ba, no, the zigday ba means kiddush bogad ba, once he acted treacherously towards her by divorcing her. By selling her, you're right. Yeah, by selling her. Shuvah in Rashi Lemurcher, and then at that point he's not able to sell her anymore. So in other words, let's go through it like this.
Selling her is like a bird.
So one second. So once Peres Talisa Aleha, Once there was yield, in other words, Pirus Talisela, Rabbi Akiva's explanation over here, that Pirus Talisela means that there was yield. If at that point he divorces her after the yield and she returns home, now there was only yield, there was only kedushin, which we're going to establish later on whether yield creates the suit or not. But for the moment, we're assuming that it's only kedushin. So there was kedushin. Then he divorced her. She returns home. Then at that point he wouldn't be able to sell her anymore because there was already kedushin. However, if there was no yield yet, if the adin was never miyad her, then when she returns home, the father has the ability to sell her again. So therefore, it comes out Rabbi Akiva is saying what the Tanakhama of the previous Braita said, that there can be shifchus acha shifchus. There can be two terms as a shifcha. She was sold first as a shifcha. No yield was ever done, so she went out after 6 years of yovel, as the case may be. Now her father has the ability to do it all over again. Only if Pirus Talisela, only if the Adin had been miyayed her, then her father would lose the ability to do it again. Whereas Rabbi Eliezer is saying, Bevigdeba, that the father has acted treacherously or unfairly or whatever with her, in the sense that he sold her in the first place. So therefore, once he sold her, then he can't sell her again, which would be like what Rav Shimon said.
Even if
she returns afterwards.
That's Rabbi Eliezer.
And Tosfos discusses that actually maybe we should be gerdus. The other Rashi himself says that we have to be gerdus this way. He refers to a Gemara in Sanhedrin that talks about an underlying machlokus about the concept that the Gemara is going to say everything. Yesh em l'mikro, yesh em l'masoros. What do we primarily follow? The letters as they are in the Torah, or the masoros of how to read them within the Kodesh. So Rashi, based on a Gemara and Sanhedrin, says that we must say the way we have it, the way we just had it, that Rabbi Eliezer, that Rabbi Akiva is the one, who looks at the word bevigdei and looks at yesh em l'masoros, that we read the word bevigdei which means clothing, whereas Rabbi Eliezer would hold yesh em l'mikra. Tosfos discusses the pros and cons of it a little bit, including Tosfos has a bit of discussion about the dikduk of it, which one really is the more expected form in dikduk, that bevigdo should mean his clothing, or that it should mean him, or that it should mean him acting treacherously, and therefore Tosfos comes. Well, that's what I'm saying. Tosfos discusses it a little bit back and forth and comes out saying that actually maybe it should, besides which also Tosfos points out, it's odd to have Rabbi Akiva before Rabbi Eliezer. Usually Rabbi Akiva is Rabbi Eliezer Talmud. Usually he would be quoted second. So therefore Tosfos prefers what was apparently the original Girsa before it actually changed it, which is the other way around, that Rabbi Akiva is the one, that Rabbi Eliezer is the one that holds Kivin Shapiris Talisa Aloha, which therefore is like the Tanakhama of the previous Braisa, and Rabbi Akiva would be like Rabbi Shimon of the previous Braisa. So for one thing, because Tosfos points out that, for example, according to Rashi, what you'd have to say is that even though we read the word bevigdei, you're saying that reading the word bevigdei amounts to saying with his clothing, Meloshin Beged. Tosfos says, okay, maybe actually then it should be with a segel. The same way Tosfos says, as for example, the word neged becomes negdoi, and chelev becomes telboi, beged ought to become begdoi. Bigdoi, therefore, maybe means treacherous.
Bigdoi instead of begdoi?
Well, Tosfos also discusses the possibility maybe of begdoi, but another possibility Tosfos says is you could argue that if you were to say that the word bevigdoi, which is how we read it with a chirik, means Meloshin Beged, Meloshin clothing, then the expected form maybe should be Bebegdoi with a segel rather than Bevigdoi with a chirik. Bevigdoi with a chirik might be more readily understood as acting treacherously. Anyway. But my commitment for you, what's the underlying machlokes? Rabbi Eliezer saw the yesh em l'masoros. Rabbi Eliezer holds that you primarily look at the masoros, that Meaning, you don't just the letter is in the Sefer Torah is written without the Kodesh, and you don't have a yud after. You don't have a yud in the word Bevigdo. If you had a yud there, necessarily it would show that it had to be read with a chiluk. Because there's not, it could be read with a comment. It could be read with Bevigdo, and then according to Rashi's explanation, that would mean treacherousness. But we go according to the Masorah, which is that we go according to the Masorah, which is actually the Yeshem Masoretus rather means, Rashi says, that because there's no Yud there, therefore we read it, therefore it's true when we read it in the Sefer Torah, we read it with a Chiluk, but because there's no letter over there, but because there's no Yud written over there to indicate a Chiluk, it can, not the Masoretus as we actually read it, but Yeshem Masoretus in the sense that we look at how a word spelt like that would normally be pronounced, and that would be Rebogdoi. Meloshin begida, meloshin treacherousness. Therefore, he says, kivin shabogat bog, once he acted treacherously by selling her, shuvah nereshar the mantra, because he holds yeshayim the masoretus.
It would be read the bogdai.
So it's not actually read the bogdai, but the fact that it's written without a yud allows us to read it that way.
So what's more important, the way it's read?
That's the question. Rabbi Akiva sava yeshayim the mikra. Rabbi Akiva holds that you look at the mikra, at the way it's pronounced. It is pronounced Bevigdoi, and Bevigdoi, therefore, Rashi says, means in his clothing, like that is to say, Bevigdoi. Reb Shimon saw the Yeshem Mikra v'lo Masoretus, and Reb Shimon actually is not like either one of them. Reb Shimon, who said before that there can't be Shifchos Acha Shifchos or Ishus Acha Ishus or anything like that, is because he combines both opinions. He says, the fact is, yes, it's written one way, it's pronounced a different way, you have to look at both possibilities. Therefore, whether there was Bigdoi in the sense of Ishus, or whether there was Bogdoi in the sense of Shiklus, either way, Lo Yim Shalomachra, he doesn't have the ability to sell her again. Right? Three different opinions. Interesting thing, by the way.
Why would you choose one as opposed to the other?
Well, it's different ways of learning, but it's a general machlokes. That's what I'm saying. Rashi and Tosfos both point out that there's a variety of places in Shas where we have this identical machlokes of whether the important thing is the mikra or the masoretus. The way that the letters are written in the Sefer Torah with all the various possible nekudos that could be put into them, or the masoretus of how it's actually, or the other way around, no. So the masoretus of the letters as they were nimsa to us from Har Sinai, where it's written choser in the Torah, and therefore could be read in a variety of ways, or the mikra, the way it's actually read, the actual nekudos that are attached to it.
Yes, Ashkenaz and Sfarim read the same way?
Yes. I mean, we pronounce a number of the Kodesh differently, that's the thing. In terms of Mikra, in terms of how we actually read it, when we read in Shul, everybody reads it with a Chirik. But because it's written in Torah without any letter indicating a Chirik, then that's the Mikra is a Chirik. The Masorda is the letters, Beis, Gimel, Dalet, Vav, which could equally be read Bevogdai. Interesting thing, they once asked, the Rish has in his Trubus, they once asked him, how come for something, like over here, we use the expression Yesh Eim L'mikra or the Masorda, and on the other hand, for example, we talk about a Binyan Av, what's the difference? Alright, so he says the difference is, when you're using it as something that you're going to derive other things from, which is what a Binyan Av is, then it's Av. A Binyan Av, you have a din that it says in a certain place in the Torah where you're deriving it from it to other places. When you're using it right here, and not deriving other things from it, then it's aim. Does yield create nisuin as well as does this create both erisin and nisuin, or only erisin? And nafkamina, and the practical difference would be liyosha, whether after doing yod he can yashin her if she dies at that point. Will the tamilah, if he's a koyan, is he metame for her?
Well,
that would be nisuin. Well, if that's what we're asking.
If it's nisuin,
or to be made for an adonim on his own. Whereas if it only creates erisin, then no, then none of these things apply. We had a similar question a few blocks back on Daf Yud, and we discussed over there the question, why does the Gemara need to mention what the nafkaminas are? I mean, we know what the nafkaminas are between an arusa and an asura. So we discussed then, here there's a similar kind of thing, which is, since she's already in his household, there's reason to argue that maybe these things should apply. even that we would think maybe even if we consider only an arusa, maybe all these things should apply anyway. She's already a member of a household. But nevertheless, that's what we're saying. That no, if we're going to say it's only erusin, we would nevertheless say if we're going to say it's only erusin, no, she's not an amadriya anymore. She's an arusa. But nevertheless, we would still say that she's like a regular arusa in that sense, and there's no yerusha and no matamila, etc. And that's the other part of it is also what makes the Gemara think that Yud should be any stronger than regular tradition. And again, the reason is because she's already a member of the household. Maybe, I mean, the whole difference, one of the differences between Erusin and Nisuin is Erusin, she's not yet living with her husband. Nisuin, she is. Here, she's already living in the household. Maybe it already creates Nisuin. Okay. So what's the din? Toshma. Well, come
the food. You have to leave after you've
stolen
Erusin? What? You have to leave the house?
No, I mean, not necessarily.
But in this case,
you're not allowed to live together, right?
They're not allowed to have relations, no. But, I mean, there'd be a matter of yichud. They'd have to be careful with it. They'd have to have pesach pasuach or whatever, I don't know, yeah.
If it's a yud, it's considered as an irusin.
Then, okay, yeah, the point. Maybe she wouldn't, maybe because during the time you're an arusa, you know, you can't be alone together, you can't have yichud. Sure. Anyway, Toshma, come let's prove from the previous place. The Vigdad Bar, Kimmich appears Talisa, Allah, Shavin, and Shur the Mokra. We said that we darshan the word Vigdad Bar, Moshin Beged, that once he spread his callus over her, he's not allowed to sell her anymore, the father. When once the other did years, in other words, the father can't sell her anymore. Now, Zabuni Hordele Mazdinla, which implies that at that point the father is not able to sell her anymore. Implying though that he could be Mekadosh her still, not to somebody other than the Adon. Why not? I mean, suppose the Adon was not Miyad her yet. And by the way, Rashi gives over here the definition of what you did. Omolam Mosa Hevriya, a man says to his Omer Hevriya, Harayat Yehudali B'Kesef Miknasech. You are Miyud to me using the money that I originally paid for you. That's it.
No,
Nadim, no Shtar. Well, you need Nadim, like you do with any condition, but you don't need a Shtar. Same way as by regular condition, you don't need a Shtar. Anyway, so what we're saying is like this. Once Piris Talisa Aleho was saying, if the Adin was Miyayed her, now,
against
their
will?
I don't know if it can be against her will. It can be against. We're going to talk about it tomorrow. Actually, who is that is necessary for you? Look, wait till tomorrow. We'll get into that. Suppose the Odin was miyayed her, then the Odin dies. So that's it. She goes back home. Now what we're saying is, okay, we're saying that the previous Braisa had said that her father doesn't have the ability to sell her as a shifta anymore. However, it sounds like he does have the ability to be Makadisher to somebody else. Now, if you're going to tell me that Yud is the equivalent of Nisuin, well, given the Nisus, Shuvein Lavi or Rishuspa. Well, once she's fully married, once there's Erosin and Nisuin, and her father has no more Rishus anymore over her, and therefore, just like he doesn't buy Nidorim, neither does he for Kedushin, therefore, of course, he couldn't be Makadisher. Evidently, that would mean the implication is that Yud is only the equivalent of Kedushin. And therefore, if he dies after that, then fine. She's the equivalent of a Tana who was Niskadish and widowed, where her father can be Makadisher again, like we said before. Not necessarily, because Hacha the Kedushin Da'amakari. Not necessarily, because we could be talking about Kedushin in general. When we say that Kirja Peter's Talisela, not necessarily are we referring to the specific case of Yud. We could be saying, Kivin Shemostra Avia, the mission is high, the Sheikh Susavainasa, once her father gave her over in Kedushin to somebody who is eventually going to have the Chiyurim of Sheikh Susavainasa for her, Shuveni Achalamaikra, then at that point he's not able to sell her anymore, meaning that after Kedushin there can't be a sale of an Amayri anymore. Shuveni Achalamaikra. Not necessarily are we talking about Yud per se. We could just be talking about the more general thing. Once you was Miskadish to somebody else, if the father is Makadisher, then she's widowed or divorced, so then the father can't, he may be Makadisher again, but he can't sell her. But you can't prove from that about Yud per se. Well, Well, I mean, we're darshaning from a vigdei, but it's meant in a more general sense. Kiddushin involves pirdas talitha aleihu, like he spreads his robe over in the sense that he makes he's creating a relationship. Yeah, there is an argument that pirdas talitha aleihu amounts, but yeah, there is an argument that it amounts to something like chuppah. Maybe not. I mean, you know, you have, for example, a lashon apostik where Ruth says to players, ufaras tefachal amasecha. She doesn't mean they're going to make a chuppah right then and there. It just means be mekadesh me, do yibum with me. Okay, Toshma, come, let's prove from a different Braisa. Braisa is Ein Moichel Krovim. The father is not allowed to sell her to relatives because these relatives won't be able to do Yehud with her. We'll talk more about that tomorrow. Mishum Rabbi Eliezer of Moichel Krovim. They said in the name of Rabbi Eliezer, though, that he could sell her to relatives. Vishovin, and everybody agrees, because even though tradition aren't traces, Vishovin, everybody agrees, Shemoichel Amon al everybody agrees that a ship, that an Amon Ivriya can be sold, even if she's an Amona, she can be sold to a Kohen Gadol, even though he's also to marry her, because Kedushin would be Tophus if he were. Grusha v'chalutza l'Kohen Hedyet, or if she's divorced to a Chalutza, that she could be sold to a Kohen Hedyet, again, even though he's not allowed to do Yehud with her, but if he were to, would be Tophus. So now let's consider, I Amona Hechidomi, what kind of an Amona are we talking about if he could be sold as an Amon Ivriya? Elema to Kaddish Napsha. Are we talking about she was Makadish herself? She went and accepted Kedushin on her own from somebody else? Almona Korila. How can you call her Almona? That Kedushin has no effect. While her father is alive, he's the only one who can be Makabal Kedushin on behalf of Tana. She has no ability to do it on her own. So you can't consider it Almona where there was no Kedushin. The El of the Kitchavia. So okay, are we talking about that her father was Mekadisher? Me Mopti Mizabimla. Well then how is he able to sell her afterwards? We just established before that once there was issues, once there was Kedushin, he can't sell her as a Shifcha. Yes, but you know what? We're talking about over here about the original Kedushin from which she became an Amana, was not regular Kedushin but Yud. Namely, she was sold as a shifcha. Yehud was done. Then he passed away. And this is Val Libidir of Yehuda, the Amar, which he says, Moisir Shonis Lav LeKedushin Nitnu. He says the original money was not given for Kedushin. When Yehud is done, you need, up until now, we've been assuming that Yehud is done based on the original money that was paid. That's the opinion of at the time when she was sold. That's the opinion of a Chachamim. Rabbi Yosef of Yehuda disagrees with that. He says that that original money was not meant for Kedushin, and if the Odin wants to be miyayed her, he has to pay separate Kedushin. Now, in this case, who does the Kedushin? Not to her father. So according to Rabbi Yosef of Yehuda, it comes out that there is a case where even... Yeah, one to purchase her and one to... That's how Rabbi Yosef holds. But the point of it is, because of that, since the Kedushin did not take place through the father, then therefore, we said before, the father was Makadisher to somebody, he doesn't have the ability to sell her. Here, he wasn't Makadisher. According to the Chachamim, effectively, he was. By selling her was already the first stage of Kedushin. According to Rabbi Yosef, have you heard of that not? The father only sold her as a shifcha. We said before that according to the Chachamim, as against the Shimon, you can do shifchos after shifchos. There you have a case. She can be an almona and yet be sold as a shifcha. Now, back to our discussion over here. If you're going to tell me that you constitute Nisurin, then you're back to Kivich Nisus Shuvain Lavia Roshuska. We know that once Nisurin was done, regardless of the basis of the Kedushin, whether it was regular Kedushin or Kedushin Yud or what have you, the father has no more Roshus over her. So obviously the implication is that Yud must be only Kedushin in order to make it possible that the father would be able to sell her as a Shivcha again. Otherwise, if in the scenario that we just had, if the Oden was Miyayed her, and the reason we heard is saying he needs to give her separate money for that, then he dies. If he said that you would constitute the Nisurin, that's it. The father has no more Rishus over her. And we see that the father does have Rishus over her, because that's the only case that we could have, that you have a girl who is an Almana who could potentially be sold to a Kohen Gadol. No, we're trying to figure out now. We have a braisa that says that a girl can be sold as an Almana. How is it possible that she's an Almana and she's still able to be sold as a Shifcha? This is the case. says, where I asked back the Elamai Erisin, I said, so what are you going to tell me then that you're going to say it's not Erisin, but rather, it's not Nisuin, but rather Erisin? So what do you mean, Rishavin Shemaychra? What do you mean, everybody agrees you could sell her? We've also said before that you can't sell her the shikla even after issues, even after any kind of issues, even erusin. So regardless, then you wouldn't have that she could be sold.
Erusin,
yud, or nisuin. Yeah. So what do you necessarily have to say, shiny erusin didad, may erusin davia? Necessarily, you were going to be saying that there's a difference between erusin that she did versus erusin that her father did. No, I didn't. I'll be there in a minute. After the chayman, nisuin oisa, by the same logic, you could say, even if you constitute nisuin, again, shiny nisuin didav and nisuin davia, you could still argue that maybe nisuin that comes about through her own erusin, her own yud, is different than what her father did. And therefore, you could argue maybe he would be able to sell her in that case.